So this short conversation we had about Beetlejuice or Betelgeuse. But everybody's going to say Beetlejuice when it blows because...
Now, yes. Yeah. Thank
of
you.
Of a movie. Mm-hmm. So... What happens to our environment when something like that happens? Does anybody remember the comet that hit Jupiter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No?
No.
Yeah, that was...
Shoemaker-Levy 9.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Which was when?
A couple of...
Late 90s?
It was the 90s,
but I can't remember which year. So so this comet actually hit Jupiter, broke up into a variety of pieces, and hit Jupiter. Huge explosions visible. It was really dramatic and beautiful in a lot of ways. And astrologers, note astrologer, not astronomers, made big note of it because they said, well, crap, for the next several years, and it was so, for the next several years, all Jupiter aspects are going to be more intense. And they were. So that the behavior of Jupiter in people's charts was different for a good chunk of time after Shoemaker-Levy 9. It was energized in a very different way. And why am I saying this? Because physical stuff that you observe in the world has an impact and resonates in the subtle realms as well. By the way, this is why spirits of various kinds have an interest in what we do or don't do, because what we do in the physical world reverberates in their worlds, and what reverberates in their worlds affects us as well. It's there's reciprocity and communion and connection between all of them. So if something like a supernova that's visible in the heavens occurs, or if there's something like a comet that hits a planet that's a big gas field, and it was pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. You should, if you are not familiar with it, look up the videos. They're still available online in a variety of places. Stunning video. If there's so there's something going on right now, and this is, affects the energy that you move and shape, because you are also affected by the environment in which you are moving energy. So recently we had a Pluto-Saturn conjunction. Yes?
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of other things going on. And one of the things about
Jupiter's with it now.
That's a whole other thing. but one of the things that happens with Pluto and Saturn conjunctions is that they are often associated with things like, I don't know, earthquakes, volcanoes. Have we had some of those?
Yeah.
Forest
also,
fires.
Australia. Actually, my favorite one is that when Pluto and Saturn hook up, there's usually plagues.
Yes.
Oh,
nice.
Charming.
The last time that we had a conjunction between Pluto and Saturn was the astrological significator for the beginning of HIV becoming a pandemic.
Wow.
So.
By the way, that's one of the reasons why I said that it's possible that in the next couple of years, we may have some progress because it's come full cycle. And in each of the aspects between Pluto and Saturn, there's been some kind of revelation or discovery related to HIV. It also is associated with the disruption of political power in the world.
Yay!
Maybe. Revolution doesn't always mean
revolution.
Progress. Sometimes revolution means a new totalitarian state.
No.
It also means fall of royal houses, etc. But here's something else. Let's think smaller. When Pluto and Saturn, and by the way, yes, it's already happened, but guess what? These things move slow. They reverberate for a long time.
Yeah, but they go in far enough. They're off
by
Saturn.
Well, you personally. But here's what I'm saying. Especially this year, because there's so much stuff of consequence going on astrologically, and pay attention to what's going on in nature as well. Be mindful of how much energy of different sorts you can actually move. So, for example, good news, bad news. In the current environment, it is possible to make strong and fairly permanent changes to your energy field.
Do it right.
If you do it right.
Yeah.
Right? Think about it. You have Saturn, which is structure. You have Pluto, which is death, rebirth, transformation in all its forms. and that's reverberating through the air. We've got Jupiter and Saturn lining up. And it's not, and we're heading towards conjunction where they change what element the conjunctions are in for the first time in 200 years. It's the end of an 800-year cycle. Mm-hmm. So the point is, in this year, as you move energy, because remember I said energy work is a lot like doing exercise. And if you do exercise and stretch and do all those things, it changes your physical body, right? Mm-hmm. As you do energy work this year, be mindful of how you use it, because it is shaping your energy bodies perhaps a little bit more profoundly than what happened in most years. Good news and bad news. But if you use it with awareness and will, it becomes a good thing. So even if these sorts of things aren't your bag of tricks that you normally reach to, be mindful of the fact that things in the environment also impact on how you are able to. Fouhier has noticed that when it's foggy and misty outside, their experience of energy work is different.
Yeah.
Why? What's fog and mist made out of?
Water.
Water amplifies everything.
So you have a bazillion little droplets of water hanging in the air. Mm-hmm. How could that not have an impact?
And if water hates you, then you have...
Water doesn't hate you.
Yes, it does.
Form a different relationship to it.
We're working on that.
Okay. But my point is, pay attention to your environment, both the macro stuff going out up there, and also the micro stuff like your immediate physical environment, because each of those things changes. And if you know it changes, you can change how you move your energy. Like, for example, I do really well raising and moving energy at the seashore. I love it. I am crap on the mountain. There's nothing. I have zero access to energy if I'm high on a mountain. Relatively speaking, I have to work for every last little bit.
Now we know your weakness.
Mons Olympus is a nice place to visit. Biggest volcano on Mars. Mm-hmm. It's about the size of the state of Arizona and 2.5 times taller than Everest.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Fun.
That'd be perfect. So, be mindful of, and pay attention, because you may discover quirky things about certain environments in which your energy behaves in different ways. Sound good?
Mm-hmm. Question?
Yes, please.
Could you just touch on the relationship between our physical bodies and raising energy and different ways of doing, like maybe we don't want to run energy through us, or maybe we do, depending on what kind of physical shape we're in?
All right, so I'll give you multiple examples, and then you'll have to find which one fits. So who here in the room remembers being in ritual with Shakma Windra? Okay. And some of you knew her younger, some of you knew her older. Shakma was a physical wreck. Mm-hmm. Even from the first day I met her, and it just got worse over the years. She ate poorly, she did all the wrong substances in abundance. She didn't like to sleep regular hours. I mean, if you could figure out ways to mess with your physical vitality, she was actively engaged. And yet, she was capable of causing kick-ass things to occur in ritual. I think probably the most dramatic one I ever saw was literally, physically, the central altar, which was covered in a trillion things because they believed in things. Mm-hmm. Central altar, nobody near it.
Mm. Wow.
Vibrating, bouncing up and down.
But nothing fell off.
Nothing fell off. Now, she could barely walk, and in the end she didn't walk at all. In the end, she was on oxygen as well, running rituals. And so that physically, she was a wreck. Okay. So when she was younger, she was a dancer. She was a school teacher, but her love was dance, and she actually was remarkably physically fit in her youth. And she was a magical person back then as well, though it was Haitian voodoo as opposed to what she eventually ended up doing. So here's the thing. In her youth, and when she took better care of herself, she did magic using herself. As she got older and frailer, she was using more of the people in the room as proxies for her. So that basically she was calling, invoking into the people in her space the work. So she was still directing the energy, but very indirectly, and still potent in doing her magic, but not running it through herself. And the few times that she would, she usually ended up collapsing during the ritual. So, is it possible for... Now, here's the thing. And I've known other people that have, long-term disabilities for one reason or another. In her case, there were multiple things going on. And they were competent magical workers. However, you have to find a way to work with what you have. Now, I would say that if you are aware of what your boundaries are, then you figure out which tools you have access to make the work go. That said, there are things that I would caution against. So for example, let's say that you are going to be calling upon energy, not just yours, but borrowed energy from, say, elementals or spirits or other beings. I'm less concerned in that moment about your physical nature than I am about your emotional and spiritual nature. Because let's say that you have a bad day at work. Never happens. and you are harboring all manner of unpleasant things from the day within you. And here you are, you're about to call forth particular spirit helpers to come do the work with you.
Oh. Oh,
no. Now here's the problem. So when you call, you don't get to choose which of the many voices within you. So the voice that you choose to say the lovely invocation comes out, your high-minded intention comes out, but all the unsaid things are just as loud to spirit ears. So that when you call, you're calling with your whole self, not just the self that you want to put as your mask or your front. So that what shows up will reflect the totality of who you are in that moment and not the parts that you want to show first. Do you understand what I'm saying?
The things that live here told me that they see me because of my pain, because I'm always in pain, and it's sort of like the way some fairies are brighter. They can see me because I always have something they can sense, because it projects louder than I actually could.
And I mentioned it many times, but it's worth the watch for a variety of reasons. But monsters from the id, forbidden planet.
Yeah.
Would that be a cause then to be careful who you call or invoke, knowing what comes with
it? It's worse than that, because... It's worse than that, because let's say that you're invoking, recalling for help from... Well, let's make it relatively benign. Let's say that you are calling for Hephaestus to show up and help you with something that you are making. Not bad. Very, very focused task at hand, etc. And you may be calling on Hephaestus, and maybe some part of your gut is saying, I'm really cranky, I want Nemesis to show up too because I've got a bone to pick with somebody. So the thing is that whatever the loudest voice within you is going to attract, not just the one that you choose. And sometimes it's other things beyond. And there's another thing about energetic cleanliness, and then I'm going to go back on track. That's the wrong time of year for this problem, but let's pretend that it's now warm outside and things are in bloom, and we put out a lovely cloth on the ground, and we put out food for a picnic, and we walk away, and when we come back, our food is covered in ants. Why?
Because Kishi didn't get there fast enough.
This is true. Or they were inside.
It was not there available to be picked up by anyone.
So the thing is, if you put out tasty, scrumptious stuff, anything that likes that stuff is going to show up. So if you leave food out, it attracts critters, vermin, insects, etc. If you leave an energy thing, if you put out a feast of energy to attract the attention of something that you want, then it may attract other things that you don't want, which is why you clean up after yourself at the end of every ritual. Mm-hmm. Unless it's, you know, very specific parameters. So for example, if you have a shrine in your backyard to a particular thing, then it's to some degree guarded by the being that it is consecrated to. If you randomly, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. By the way, this is my major objection to roadside funeral things where people put flowers and crosses and
teddy
stuff,
bears
and stuff for you know, as part of the grieving process. Initially, it's okay, but after a very short span of time, you are simply asking for astral vermin to show up.
Yes,
and it becomes a very negative thing.
Which is then going to feed that. Which is then going to feed that and cause more accidents.
Right. It will bring more of the same.
Yeah,
we'll more
and
same.
Potentially keep the person attached to it if they haven't.
Well, and even if they're not attached to it, let's even worse. Let's say they have traumatic death and they've moved on, and every time one of their damn relatives is down there grieving and putting up shit, they're going like, why can't they let go? I wish they were happy. I wish they had moved through this process. So even if they're fine and elsewhere, they will still be looking back and like, oh my God, I wish they would take the crap out of my old bedroom and turn it into something useful. You know what I'm saying?
We saw that live and in person in a group. There was one young woman who very sadly lost her child, her older child. And we got messages from Spirit. I guess the group guide said that the danger for her is if she didn't let her son go, she would go to anybody who could get spirit messages. My son's an angel now, right? Any messages from him? And he said, I've moved on. If she doesn't give me up, she's going to bind her own spirit to this plane.
Stop mm-hmm. calling, do not disturb.
Yeah.
Well, so I'm going to leave the, actually narrowing in on something about energy work and then get back on track with other stuff. So I think it's necessary to touch on these things on the way. So what do you suppose happens if you do regular energy work and you build up your flexibility and your strength and your flow and you do magic so that it becomes second nature, like crocheting or riding a bicycle or whatever it is? It becomes your second nature, right? Okay. What do you suppose happens when you lose your cool?
Oh,
yeah.
I call Morgan instead of somebody else.
So in this particular case, I will not name names, though they are people that I still see on a regular basis. So once upon a time, two individuals that are well-versed in all the things that we've been talking about today had a personal thing going on. And I wish Jim were there. Tracy won't mind.
He's
not
in Jim.
So let's pretend that we've known each other, we've worked with each other, we're both magical people, we're angry at each other, so we're like yelling at each other and looking at each other and screaming at each other. In our heads, we're just having an argument, right? No. What is happening when you raise emotion, it raises energy.
And that's what you call it.
You're doing what we just did, except with intent.
No intent.
Well, it has its own intent.
A lot of energy. You could fry a whole
You could have zero malice. Zero malice. Zero intention.
Destroy everything.
But if you're both powerful and have done the work, and you are both in close proximity yelling at each other, you are both flash frying each other's auras.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you can take out people around you, too.
And the dogs.
Yeah. Well, if anybody's nearby. I get you up. I'm gonna exaggerate because it'll help. Now, by the way, these two individuals that I observed do this auric flash fry with each other, what do you suppose they saw the next day?
Fire.
I feel like crap.
Yes.
Okay, then.
They did, but they also said so-and-so cursed me.
Yeah. Oh. The other person?
The devil
yeah.
made
Someone
me
else.
Do it.
No, they... She cursed me. No,
each
she cursed me.
Oh, oh.
Because they had done damage to each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
they had done... So here's the part. They had done damage to each other, that were, but was it actually a curse?
No.
Was there intention? Did they go home and light a couple of candles and do some things? No. They had hurt each other, but it was not... But it was the outcome. So let's say that you were all trained in martial arts. And let's say that you've gone to war, so let's add other kind of trigger moment. And you both now lay into each other because you think the other did something. Mm. So one of the things that I'm going to say is also part of the practice of long-term health and vitality in this, is trying to figure out how you are when you lose your cool. Because your energy can get out of control, and some parts of you are going to lash out because they know how, whether or not you're consciously aware of it. And this happens, not that curses don't matter, not that people don't do real horrible negative magical shit because I've had to clean up after. So this is, people say, oh, this never happens. Well, you know what?
It does.
Now, I can argue that it's still a small percentage, but the same could be said of how many people are murderers.
Right.
Or how many people are sociopaths. I mean, they exist.
Right.
They are not the majority, but they exist. Or malignant narcissists, they're more common. But but the point is, that, sure, that bad stuff exists, but a lot of times, I also see what I'm going to call the equivalent of magical accident. Because people lose their cool, and if you've learned how to move energy, and yes, coworkers can get in the way. For those of us that have beloveds, hopefully they run out of a room fast.
Really, mm.
But the point is, we can stir up stuff. And in the same way that roadside shrine that is attracting astral vermin, man, you are chumming the water when two magical people have a fight with each other. So before coming to conclusions about was there a bad thing intentional or anything else, the first thing I recommend for all magical people that have had a tiff with another magical person is get thee to your energy healer. I mean, seriously, the first thing to do is, get checked out. If you're not feeling right, basically you need magical first aid. And then you can decide, okay, maybe we just lost our collective cool and energy exploded on each other. If there's actually a curse, there are ways to test and things to do, blah, blah, blah. But honestly, I'm going to say that this category of magical injury is more common.
Mm-hmm.
And just become more aware of the fact that you are capable of doing more harm if you've become more adept at moving energy.
What do you do if you've done stupid?
Which flavor of stupid? I can think of so many.
That's a broad term.
When you harm someone else.
Oh, by losing your cool and...
Yeah.
I have at times offered to help put them right, or I've suggested people in my go-to if they don't feel comfortable talking to me about it. I've also been the recipient of a variety of things like that.
And then are you just icky forever, or...?
No.
No.
I'm a little too Christian still, obviously.
No. Yeah. How about this? Anything that's... Okay, examine your relationship to conflict and how you move through it. Like, think about every person you've ever had an argument with. Are there people in your life that you've had arguments with that you're okay with now?
Yeah.
There we go. Anything that's, just because it's magical doesn't mean it's any different than what occurs in mundane life. Mm-hmm. You just have to be aware of what's come up, where is it coming from.
You need to forgive yourself.
And make right if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
Or become aware of the fact that that's what's happened.
Your auric bodies will heal.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, energy amends is never a bad thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's never
something
a bad
that
thing.
We
never
have actually thing. Lost practice of is, you know, we say empathy, but empathy also requires, you know, amends.
Making amends, yeah.
When you have purposefully or inadvertently, you know, hurt someone, amends helps. And it doesn't just help the other person, it helps yourself too.
Mm-hmm.
I just have trouble with that with a non-magical person. If someone, I'm pretty cool, but if someone hits past that level, it's just like all the black out of me just goes, whoomp! But they obviously can't tell what I've done, and I don't know well enough how to tell if I've done anything bad other than I'm like, oops.
Well, then send out a positive just in case.
Let's consider this many opportunities for learning experiences. And if you are moving energy and working magic, it's also a good idea to learn some basic healing techniques or ways in which you settle yourself down or help other people settle down as well.
Mm-hmm. Would shielding minimize that damage? Shielding yourself?
Absolutely. Though frequently what I see is if two people have lost their cool with each other, neither of them remember to.
No.
If one person's lost their cool,
can you add that to your first aid class?
And of course, there's always the first premise that I'm pretty sure we've all come across. Words have power, and no matter how angry you become, certain things should never be spoken.
Mm. And often are.
Sometimes in the moment you're like, I will take the smut, I don't care.
But what we were just talking about of negating is that if you sent out a negative, then how do you negate it? Is you give them
so
a
I'll
blessing.
So I'll give you one quick thing to begin the process, and then sadly we do have to move on because we're trying to cram a lot into one class. So, do you believe that people have a higher self, divine spark, fill in the blank for some variation thereof?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Some part of them that is still remembers all they are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whatever your language is. I often will begin the process by having a light a candle, sit at a table, imagine the person is sitting in front of me, and I will direct my gaze above their head to their divine spark, their higher self, and begin the process of telling them everything that I need to tell them. Why? One, I think that they hear it, feel it on some level. And two, then when I am physically in their presence again, I have begun the process of changing how I feel about it.
And that would work better, with non-magical people who, if you...
Especially with non-magical people.
People that, I did this thing to you.
But you can begin the process that way. But there's a lot of ways to attend to this. This is just my be mindful of the fact that more strength, more capability means more accountability and more self-awareness. That's all. Same way that didn't happen to me, but I had a variety of friends that when they were teenagers had growth spurts and suddenly they were bigger and stronger than everybody else around them. And they didn't realize that they were bigger and stronger than everybody else around them. And you may not suddenly grow 6 inches, but you, for all intents and purposes, you get the idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm going to say that you need a tuning fork. What do I mean by that? Or a blood sample. Or maybe you've just decided to get a lovely flame agate. Or a little oak bulb. I don't care what it is, but it's a really good idea to have keep it in a little warded box or someplace nice and safe. Keep a thing that is an imprint of a state preservation of who you are when you're feeling fine and you're yourself. Mm. Your transport buffer.
Can you repeat that? A part of yourself?
So most of us don't have the equivalent of spiritual perfect pitch. We don't know what our energy feels like, sounds like, its normal default state is. And when we've done a lot of energy work, or when something has put us off our balance one way or another, it's sometimes hard to know, am I back to my normal, or am I still affected by what's going on? And I have this little fire agate that I have that I use as my, this is where when I'm feeling good and I'm feeling fine and everything's good in my life, I will wear that little fire agate ring, I'll meditate with it. And then when I'm really out of sorts, I will take it from its little box and I will put it on and I will go, huh, boy, I'm flat today or I'm sharp today. So basically, I use it as a point of comparison for my energy to remind me what I feel like when things are okay.
Now, why a fire ahead?
It could be an opal. There are things that hold on to a lot of energy and pattern easily. Now, fire agates are actually filled with water, which is what gives them that lovely flash. But you could use an opal. Frankly, you could use any number of things. Honestly, I have a friend that has a piece of coral that works just fine for her. But the point is to have something where you store a chunk of you so that you have a reference point, a baseline for what your energy feels like and you're doing okay. Makes it much easier to try to nudge your way back if you have something that's a point of comparison. And you have to periodically wear it or blow energy into it or whatever you do, because you're a moving target. Your normal good state changes over time. Mm-hmm. Who you are changes over time. But man, it's also valuable if, let's say that, and we actually did this once for one of our members years ago. Let's say somebody gets totally wrecked at a ritual. In this particular case, it was one of Chakma's rituals. Chakma did not believe in safety.
No.
At all. So all the healers that were present didn't know the person. Mm-hmm. So if you're a healer and it's a stranger, and the kind of distress or imbalance you get from ritual or energy work is very different than having an illness. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, so basically, pretend you're the healer. So he gave her, mm-hmm. Here, hold this crystal, and now I want you to go scan the person you're going to work on and use this as a guide. That's what they should look like. So you can also keep it as part of your travel kit of like, if you need somebody to work on you that's a healer, an energetic healer of some kind, mm-hmm. But if you have that as a template, it's going to help. Yes, in theory. In theory, some healers have a method by which they try to access the template of that person's default state elsewhere on the astral or the Akashic, blah, 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 blah. And that's all well and good, and it's really nice to have a local copy that, you know, works.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. What if you're in a ritual where you're supposed to change?
Well,
like,
that's
what if you're an initiation?
That's supposed to wreck you. No, well, it's supposed to dissolve enough of your boundaries so that you can reshape yourself.
Yeah. Then how do you reshape your pattern?
You have to. You mean your story pattern?
Yeah.
You have to reimprint it. This is why you have to. It has to be a recent copy of you.
Okay.
Right. Have you
new
tried,
backup.
Version control.
Have you tried looking at old? Has anyone tried looking at old versions and seeing the difference?
Yes.
It's very interesting and very different.
Do you use a new thing, or do you just...
How things change.
If it, a lot of things, like I use the fire agate because I can just keep using it again and again and again.
Would it be similar to like finding a baby blanket or something, do you think?
Well, I actually have this is something you might start doing as a magical person. I have an index card, back when index cards existed.
They still
sort of do.
I still use it.
I don't. But I have an index card that I trimmed the edges. And there is a pen and ink and watercolor painting of me as a tarot trump that I did when I was 18. And I use that to access my first stirrings of magical work. Mm-hmm. So I have an imprint of me at the beginning of my magic. Mm-hmm. But it's valuable to have it for other times in your life. It's got Evo written in the Theban script in the corner. And but it's good to have those kinds of things.
So,
but if you don't have that kind of thing, you may have jewelry, you may have objects that connect you to different places in your life. And those might be useful if you're doing healing, energetic healing work of a different sort. Like maybe you do need to go back to a piece that was left behind.
In that way, is it good, you know, to go to a save system to have multiple objects, so like a pre-initiation item, and then instead of over-saving or overwriting, you have a new item.
Let's hope that you don't need that kind of repair work after an initiation, but, but I get what you're saying.
Right.
from the descriptions of the earlier days of the assembly, the initiations were of that kind.
She's asking for it, can't you tell? We like tearing them apart.
It's
if it's not strong, she won't
believe
it.
It doesn't hurt, it's not real.
I don't know. We only dug a trench covered in black plastic and buried somebody physically in the ground once.
Oh, come on. Only once.
And that didn't work.
We did hang Jim Dickinson upside down from his feet from a tree at Sealy Court until he saw visions and did the whole Odin thing.
I was going to say, going for Odin.
By the way, we were holding the rope. He wasn't tied up there, so there were three of us holding the rope the whole time. We had spotters underneath him, so we wouldn't break his neck if he dropped.
By the time you got to me for my first initiation, things were much milder. You simply gored me to death in your body.
I didn't think that was that bad.
You didn't think it was that bad.
Say no for hanging upside down for me.
I was just holding antlers that I was pushing energy to make the antlers sharp and alive, and then running them into his auric sheath and ripping.
Right. So yes, goring his body.
Yeah.
What
do
you
mean?
Hey,
wait, come on.
Different ones.
But I live to tell the tale.
Pick up back here.
Now.
So what is the right formation?
One more thing. How many of you use magic words or glyphs or sigils? Okay. So underutilized. And let's start with a magic word for a moment. And sometimes there are ones that are pre-existing, whether they be names or words of power from other systems, or sometimes it is a condensation where you take a phrase that is what you're trying to accomplish, and you take the first letter from each thing and turn that phrase into a word, right? Mm-hmm. How do you actually empower it so it doesn't just become a focusing tool? Because a lot of times people just use it as a focusing tool to hold their consciousness focused on the purpose or the intention. Who here has galdered or droned runes? Do you know what I mean by that?
No,
like actually carve them?
No. So,
sort of singing.
Sort of singing, sort of.
It's
simple way of explaining it.
Sort of vibrating. In ceremonial magic, it's called vibrating the word or vibrating the name, where you basically take each letter, like let's say if it was Ansus, people would be going, Ansus, or if you like a different pronunciation, Ansus, or a dozen other ways of saying it. But the point is, each group has their own, and by the way, they're all right, they're all wrong, because they all are different tribes and different countries and different languages that are using the same ones. But so that each one is kind of like droned to empower it and transmit it. So if you've created this magical word, or you've already inherited a magical word that you're using in your tradition, before actually using it in that purpose, in that ritual, spend some time with every letter, and even if it's just a standard Latin alphabet, then sing, tone that letter while you're envisioning the whole process. In other words, preload the word. Remember how time doesn't play the same way when you're doing magic? So let's say that you've come up with this word that's basically an acronym for what you're trying to accomplish, that you're going to be using as your net word of magic. Then in the ritual, you may say it loudly three times, or whatever it is that you're doing, the plan to do. Well, that's all well and good. But if before the ritual, you have taken the time to put the whole phrase in front of you and spend time basically raising energy, intoning each letter as a separate sound, then when you actually say it, it will contain all the work and all the pre-charged energy up to that moment so that it gets released as truly a word of power, not just as I'm using this as my focal point.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. So my cannabis healing rune is based on I am healed, and when you take out the vowels, the biggest letter is a D. So
leave the vowels in.
Do you think that's better?
It's a short, it's such a short phrase, right?
I know. I mean, I have one that I'm working with, mm-hmm. but I feel like it's right, but I feel like the D has too much.
If it's a really short phrase, then, you know, mess with it, or change the word if you can, in some cases, or if you speak more than one language, there's no reason why you can't switch up the language, or mix languages as well. But the biggest part is to actually turn the empowerment of that word into its own little mini working or mini ritual before actually triggering it in the ritual working itself. That has a big impact. It also is important that when you do that kind of work, when you're using your voice to empower words, or if you're doing a sigil, a symbol, that you're actually running your finger on a physical representation while you're empowering it again and again and again, so that when it's time to trace it in the air, if that's what you're planning on doing, or tracing it on yourself, it's actually already got a preloaded charge and an astral form attached to it. And when you use your voice, or when you send energy, how many times today have we talked about the idea of there being multiple layers of the aura, or multiple planes of reality, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, as you tone, or as you draw, then you should see that you're drawing in this layer, in this layer, in this layer, in this layer. When you're speaking, singing, you hear it here. Imagine that it's resounding there and resounding there. You should always try to send your energy or send your voice multiple layers and multiple levels, because then you're actually making it a fuller representation of what you're doing.
But when you put so much thought into a thing, it's closely related to a thought form.
You are making a thought form.
Well, in which case, you can't just set it and forget it. You have to, from time to time, re-empower it.
It depends on what you're doing it for. I mean, if it's something you're going to be using repeatedly, then hopefully you're doing it often enough to keep it shaped and powered. But there are some times that you're going to use it for a specific purpose, and it's fine if it fades out afterwards. It depends on your application.
Gotcha.
Not to be confused with, so back in the dawn of time, we used to call them artificial elementals. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, people call them servitors, or they call them, you know, tulpas, which is a very wrong use of that word.
Fetches.
Not quite, but some people use. So that back in the day, we used to call artificial elementals or thought forms with power attached to them. Watchers is another term for them as well. Is basically you're basically making little robots / energy AIs that you're letting loose into the universe to do something. That's the easiest way to think of it. Well, those you do have to have off switches or expiration dates on. Most times nothing bad happens, in the same way that most times dead people don't end up being nasty haunts. Right? But you remember Jurassic Park? Didn't they make those critters so they couldn't reproduce? Supposedly, but nature found a way. So sometimes if there's no off switch, and they'll just rot out, which they mostly do. But what if this poor little thingy moves from the universe, and it's so hungry, and it finds something digestible. Then it persists. So be mindful that you clean up those things. Here's the thing. In the old days, and I'm going to put this out there, because if you look up this stuff on the internet today, 9 times out of 10, they're going to tell you to make these critters out of your energy, often out of your sexual energy. Fapping is the easiest way to make servitors. If you go out on the web, I'm not making this up.
That's true.
I'm not making this up. If you go online right now, 9 out of 10 of the articles about how to do these things requires your sexual energy or your vitality to make these happen. And in the old days, we were told never to do that. Mm. Why? These work by the way, sexual energy does work. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to access, blah, blah, blah. However, that is a, you might as well be getting out drops of your blood and locks of your hair. Yeah. And anything that happens to that little critter has the potential to rebound on you. Mm. Whose energy imprint is all over it?
Yours.
Residents? Mm-hmm. Light calls to light? So, not that I would ever do this, but if you happen to run into somebody's servitor, tulpa, artificial elemental, and they made it out of that stuff, then you can do things to that little critter. Not that I would ever do that.
I did. I had a junkie brother-in-law, and I made something to tell me when he was in my apartment. I knew if he went down there even just to do laundry.
Of course he did. But you can make these beings, and this, remember earlier I was saying you can make things, you can pull on many different kinds of energies in. You don't have to run everything through your wiring. If you make artificial things or lasting constructs to do particular work, you can make them out of things other than your own energy. Unless you want to be your own energy, and there are good reasons to do that as well, just be mindful of what are you trying to accomplish and how are you going to empower them with what source. Yes.
So, is this your energy, or does this mean your filtered energy?
If it ran through, in a lot of these cases, people are encouraged to either use sexual energy or to blow life into it using your breath. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't filter out your pattern from your life breath.
No, thank goodness, I never read that. I just pulled energy in.
Yeah. But nowadays,
and shaped it and.
There's a lot of recipes on the internet right now that work really well, but other people can make use of that.
That was before there was even an internet.
I know, but I'm just saying that right now there's a lot of stuff.
Somebody on the internet is lying.
No, no, no.
Everything is safe.
No, you're right.
What if you were creating something whose job it is, because I have a friend that has
that's
this.
Right.
What if you were creating something whose job it is to remind you, kind of like a smartphone or smartwatch, to get up and exercise? Or to remind you it's time to go to bed. Or to remind you
you
should
magically,
be...
you could program your phone.
No, it's different. It really is different. I know somebody who uses something that was made out of their energy to remind them it's time to go right.
Oh.
Right. They're a writer.
Do tell the secret.
Well, because here's the thing. It's harder to ignore something made out of your own energy and it gets through your defenses. Right?
I can backfire on you because you can beat yourself up pretty easily.
And once again, human beings are capable of doing good things and not so good things. But the point is, there are valid reasons to make it out of your life force. And there are also reasons why that might not be the best option.
So that would be the case where you filled yourself up with all the energy that you want, and then you gather the other stuff around you, you make your little whirly-girly. That's not yours, it hasn't been filtered around you, and then you start feeding it that line.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
You could do that.
Okay. I still get confused on what's your energy, what's ever.
I understand. Anyway, my point is that there's a lot of ways to use your energy. Be mindful, it's always your energy if it was process through you, or if you've apportioned out. Mark mentioned fetches for a moment, and that's a little different thing because the intention of a fetch is that energy ultimately be reabsorbed into you. Yeah, fetches are always supposed to come home. And
if you're like fetching out, then they come back unless they're crappy.
It's never supposed to be permanently separate from you.
Yes, and if you forget about them, bad things might happen. Huh?
There's the potential for it.
Remember the Tamaguchi.
No, let's not.
Any last bits?
Since we are close to time, I don't know. Are there some questions floating around? We didn't cover all of it, though. I think you can make sense of some of the things as you read. Oh, I'm going to say
rest is required after exercise. I mean, I think I've said it a couple different ways, but there is such a thing as pushing yourself too hard.
Say it a couple more times, louder for people in the back.
And that also means that sometimes you will say, I'm not the right person for that ritual role because I'm still toast.
Mm-hmm. No,
Or I'm going to go do upholding in the corner here, which is just as important. Which means helping to hold the energy flow together so that the people that are doing the active work actually don't have to watch their back. Or gently attracting additional outside energy into the space so that the etheric air doesn't get too thin. There's lots of ways to do supportive work in ritual without doing the heavy lifting.
What do you suggest for like a daily practice to help strengthen?
Well, besides doing some kind of energy or magic work every day, honestly, the breath to blood to bone is a good start every day. Doing the toning to work with your chakras in the shower is a good idea. I do that as well. Well, you know.
Toning,
yeah.
Toning, so
I'm in the shower. I'm in the shower, and I'm, you know, and I'm showering, and I'm imagining red, and toning, ooh, and going up. And so, you know, instead of singing in the shower, sometimes you can do a chakra toning in the shower. And if you feel like you can't do it in that scenario, then you can still do the colors and move the energy without making the sound as well. And you also have the added idea, and you have the added idea of, as the water's running off over me, I'm just, you know, cleansing anything that got stuck on me over the course of the day. Wash and rejuvenate.
Yep.
Okay.
And the time thing is important. I mean, there's in Latin America, there's a common psychic malady called susto. Just means fright. Well, here's the thing. Actually fixing it, fixing the psychic shock, takes the healer maybe, you know, 20, 30 minutes to actually do. Giving them some tea, rubbing them with an egg, or maybe burning some herbs or whatever. But then you usually keep them for, you know, almost the whole day or overnight in a room with the lights down, and give them some, you know, milk that you've brewed, chamomile and star anise in, or and keep them under blankies and whatever. Basically, you're making them hold still long enough so they don't pop a stitch. The work is actually done, but human beings are really good at undoing healing. So that the half the work is, are you allowing yourself time for the good work you just did to settle in? No, I'm going to try the next thing. One of the sickest people I know, and I know a lot of people. And legitimately sick is somebody who, in any given month, they've been to like five different practitioners that use five different things, and I'm not saying they're good practitioners, but there are synergistic things and side effects that happen if you go to this kind of healer, and then 2 days later go to this kind of healer, and 2 days later go to this kind of healer.
Anything to settle.
Nothing settles, and so it's all a jumbled mess, and they actually get sicker instead of better.
Yep.
And they keep chasing health by going to the next healer, when actually all
they're
doing
not working together.
Yes.
That's almost like the people who go from reader to reader.
Same idea.
To reader.
Oh, yeah.
Same
oh,
idea.
Yeah.
It's the same pattern. But the same is true when you're doing good exercise to strengthen yourself. Let it settle a little bit before you do the next thing. And you can only discover what that is. Some people, like I know people that can work out at a gym 7 days a week and their body takes it and it works for them. And other people, if they did that, that would be a great way to end up in the hospital.
Exactly.
Also, to be aware of those for whom that works out great for like short term and then
crash burn.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So be mindful, take notes. And it's not a straight line. There'll be good times and bad times where there's sliding back and going forward. I think that's all we can cram into one day safely. I'll get the audio files up and available and send you guys the link. Is that the best way? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.